discovered that she had a sister. Her mother had never told her of it. Not in all the years they had lived together had her mother once mentioned that she'd had another daughter, years before Catherine. Elaine. Catherine discovered her sister's existence the day after her mother's funeral, as she went through the pitiful remnants that her mother had left behind. A scattering of photos, most of them obviously taken many years earlier, when her mother had been young and pretty, long before the years of toil had ground her down to a hard, suspicious shell of a grey-haired woman. Two images in the computer file showed her mother with a baby. Only two images out of hundreds that had accumulated over the years. But those two images sparked Catherine's lively interest. Who was this baby? Why was her mother cradling the infant so tenderly in her arms? The advantages of wealth include the ability to buy information. Catherine used her corporate security office to hire private investigators and track down this mystery child. She learned at last that her mother had borne a daughter to one of her earliest lovers, nearly 10 years before Catherine had been born. The man was wealthy, powerful. He refused to marry her mother, but took the baby from her to raise as his own. Mother never saw her again, Catherine realized. That's what made her so bitter. That's why she was so wary when Catherine met Farrell Westfall. "Get him to marry you," Mother had insisted. "Marriage or nothing." So she had married, and her mother had died wealthy and comfortable. And Catherine learned she had a sister. Her sister was a scientist who had been at research station Thomas Gold, orbiting Jupiter. But now, Catherine found, she was back on Earth, in a convalescent hospital in Ireland. She travelled halfway across the world to meet her sister, and arrived exactly 2 hours too late. Elaine O'Hara had died at almost the moment Catherine had left Sydney. She had been in poor health physically and emotionally since she'd taken part in the ill-fated mission into Jupiter's deep, seething ocean. Jupiter had killed Catherine's only sister. "Now," she told herself, as she lay on the bed in her luxurious stateroom aboard Australia, "it wasn't Jupiter that had killed her. It was the single-minded, blindly arrogant scientists who had sent her to her death. And now Catherine Westfall was going to avenge the death of the sister she had never known in life. She was going to kill the scientists' investigation of Jupiter. One way or another, she was going to send them all packing back to Earth. Dead or alive, she swore to herself.
Electronics Workshop. Andy Corvus was not smiling as he bent over the electronics components scattered across the work table. "Murphy's Law," he muttered to himself. "If anything can go wrong, it will." "What seems to be the problem?" Dorn asked. The cyborg was sitting easily on a swivel-topped stool a meter or so from Corvus, who was on his feet, staring unhappily at the hardware strewn along the table. The electronics workshop was small, hardly big enough for the two men. Its one workbench was fully equipped, though, with tools and diagnostic instruments. Corvus wondered how Australia's maintenance crew kept the ship going with such a minuscule workshop, but then he guessed that the ship's systems got inspected and overhauled regularly in port after a trip was finished. Corvus looked up at Dorn, and his face went from a frustrated scowl to a sheepish expression. "I've been working on this rig since we left Solini, and it's still not right." Pointing to a gray titanium cylinder resting on the workbench, no bigger than his fist, he said, "I've got to get all these components to fit into that container. 6 kilos of goods in a 5-kilo bag." Dorn waved his human hand. "Get a bigger container." "It's not that easy," Corvus said, looking chagrined. "The size of the container is dictated by the volume available in the dolphin's skull."
"Dolphin?" Grinning crookedly, Andy said,
"Sure. Didn't you know we're carrying dolphins aboard the ship? Taking them out to the gold station."
"Dolphins?" Dorn seemed incredulous.
"It's part of my work," Corvus explained. "I'm brain-linking with the dolphins as a sort of preliminary test, see if I can make contact with the Leviathans."
"And we're carrying dolphins on this ship all the way out to Jupiter?"
Corvus nodded enthusiastically. We sure are. 4 whole decks have been converted into an aquarium for them. Dorn shook his head in disbelief. I was going to try to make contact with them later today, but if I can't get my transceiver into the volume they've allowed for their skulls...
You'll have to make smaller components, Dorn said, quite matter-of-factly. Then he added, or make more room in the dolphin's skulls.
Deirdre had slept poorly, her dreams filled with scenes of war and bloodshed. Dorn, Doric Harbin, didn't appear in those dreams. At least, she didn't remember his presence. But the dreams were horrifying. People being slaughtered, villages burned to the ground, and the old chrysalis habitat methodically destroyed, slashing laser beams, ripping its components apart, people blasted into the vacuum of space, not even able to scream as their lifeblood spewed out of them. She was glad that Dorn wasn't in the dining room when she came down for breakfast. But as she slid her tray along the dispenser tables, she saw Max Jaeger sitting off in a corner by himself, as if he'd been waiting for her. As soon as he saw Deirdre, the burly engineer got up from his solitary table and buzzed over to her.
"Good morning," he said, smiling widely. "I hope you slept well."
"Not very," Deirdre replied. She filled her tray with a plate of eggs, a mug of fruit juice, and a dish of melon balls, Jaeger beside her every step of the way. She found an empty table, and Jaeger immediately pulled out a chair in his meaty hands and held it for her.
"I didn't sleep all that well either," he said as he sat across the table from her. "Strange surroundings, huh? Have you done much traveling?"
With a shake of her head, Deirdre admitted, "This is my first trip away from home."
"I've traveled a lot," Jaeger said. "Been to Mercury twice, helping Yamagata Corporation design those big solar energy satellites they're putting up out there. Rumor is, they want to use some of them to power lasers that'll propel light sail ships out to Alpha Centauri."
"Alpha Centauri?" she marveled. Before Jaeger could respond, Deirdre's pocket phone buzzed. She fished it from the pocket of her slacks and saw the text message on its minuscule screen. "Deirdre Ambrose, please report to Dr. Pohan in the infirmary. At once." Staring at her, Jaeger wondered aloud,
"What's that all about?"
Deirdre pushed her chair away from the table and got to her feet. "I have to go," she said.
"You haven't had any breakfast."
"I'm not that hungry, really." And she hurried out of the dining room, glad to leave Jaeger standing there alone. Wrinkled, bald, mustachioed Dr. Pohan smiled at her as Deirdre stepped into his office, but somehow his smile seemed tense to her, forced. The wall screens showed images of medical scans, slices through her body, circles of intestines, interiors of lungs like budding branching flowers, pulsing, beating organs.
"That's what I look like inside," Deirdre said to herself as she sat, staring fascinatedly in front of the doctor's desk.
Without preamble, Dr. Pohan said,
"We have a puzzlement on our hands, young lady."
"A puzzlement?"
"You have rabies."
Shocked, Deirdre gasped. "Rabies? That's impossible." Gesturing to the wall screens,
"Impossible or not, your scans show the rabies virus lurking in your bloodstream. It can infect your brain, you know."
"I can't have rabies," Deirdre insisted. "You get rabies from an animal bite, don't you? I haven't been bitten by any animal. We don't allow pets on Chrysalis, too. Not animal pets, anyway." His strained smile still in place, Dr. Pohan said gently,
"How you acquired the virus is puzzling. Very puzzling. But the important thing at the moment is to